And we are back for the 225th time. And somehow we're going to try to make it sound different than the other 224 times. We're going to have unique things to talk about. At least that's the goal. Thank you for joining us here at the Parish of the Patriots. Glad you're here, whether you're a longtime listener or you just stopped by for the first time, whatever brought you here. I'm glad you're here. If you are new around these parts, we do have a Christian-specific segment, a sermon, if you would, and I do shoot for that about the halfway point of the show, roughly, very roughly, the halfway point of the show. As always, as I'm trying to do with every show here, and I know Dr. Johnson is as well, reminding everybody we're going to continue to have the links to where you can contact or write letters or support Sven Longshanks any way you can. We're not going to forget our man there in jail. Believe me, I'm not. Every time I have to mess with posting stuff up here on the network, I'm like, man, I wish Sven would get out. I'm just being funny. I wish my friend was out. My heart is heavy when I think about him being locked up right now. On a selfish note, I wish he'd get out so he could go back to doing this stuff. Not feeling it. I don't have anything extra behind paywalls or Patreons or anything else. So if you get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It's easy. Go down to my description page. I got snail mail, got Bitcoin, got Monero. Email to drop your notes. If you got a different cryptocurrency, email me. I can more than likely get you a wallet for that. And I can't be proud because I'm poor. I got bills to pay and I can do this or I can go get a job. I want to keep doing this. So throw something in the plate, please. Poor. And speaking of which, let's do this. Listener supporter mailbag. I think I got everything. I think I got everything spit out. Dear Dan, thank you for all you're doing for Radio Albin's Fan and Us. That's from R&G. And it says, P.S. BDSmovement.net. Boycott Israel. Yes, I put R&G here and left other stuff out because, you know, I respect y'all's anonymity. Mr. T, I did get your note. We're using yours in the Christian-specific segment, so don't be freaking out thinking the post office ate your note this week. Your note is coming up later. And see, just like that, my plate is empty. I'm done through the listener supporter mailbag. Lots of stuff going on, and I'm recording the show on Saturday, which is pretty typical. Some weeks, I record on a different day. Most weeks, if things are going according to plan, I record on a Saturday. Stuff going on. This stuff over in Russia is taking weird turn of events. And I'm not going to talk about that because by the time the show airs, obviously it's a very fluid situation. And this will all be out of date anyway. So I'm not going to talk about that. I mean, I'm sure we're going to be talking. You know, when I get done recording the show, I'm recording on Saturday morning. I'm going to be contacting the Dr. Johnson and be like, man, what do you think about all this? Because you know Dr. Johnson's going to have something to talk about it. So, you know, this is going to be the place. I brag about the content here, and most of the time I'm bragging about Dr. J, because I have a humble view of myself. I'm entertaining. But no, seriously, with like something that's going on with this, whether it's the Russia-Ukraine conflict or now this latest thing that's going on, I mean, he knows his stuff. Because he can read the language and understand it. He's got sources he can read and that you're not going to get. You get the Disney cartoon version in the media. I do. I think we got really, really good stuff here. Anyway. So we're going to see. We're going to see lots of stuff going on. And of course, there's always stuff going on. We did this crazy sub thing. The submarine thing. And y'all probably tired of hearing about it. It's kind of old news. Kind of old news now, but still, I got to shake my head. I got to shake my head. Like I say, I know y'all have heard people commenting on this, but you ain't heard me comment on it. So I got to throw my two cents in, and it just amazes me. Just amazes me the folly of people, I mean, yeah, it's one of those things. People don't want to speak ill of the dead, but I mean, damn, come on, people. This is proof. You're paying $250,000 a piece to go in this thing. And I've been talking with people IRL about this in just regular conversating. And of course, I got to share with y'all. I consider this a regular conversation with y'all. I love y'all. And it just, you look at this thing. And I say, this proves This proves that wealthy people can be midwits. You know, don't think. People see somebody, oh, he got all kinds of money. He rich. And you automatically assume that that means they must be really smart, right? You think that must mean he's smart. He's rich. This just proves, this just highlights that you can be extremely wealthy and be a midwit. Because I thought this really highlighted, you know, you always see that meme, you know, with the midwit scale, you know, and it's just that. Because you look at this submarine thing, and if you looked at the far right side of that scale, you know, and some like very educated PhD engineer type of guy would look at this and I will not be going on this craft. You can see that the structural integrity is not designed to hold the sort of, you know, per square centimeter pressures that would be exerted on these parts of the. And if you went to the other side of that scale and grabbed, like, I don't know, the guy that picks up your trash and said, forget paying money. If you said, hey, you can go in this thing for free, and you can look at me, I ain't getting on that thing. You must be out of your mind. But see, in the midwit part, yes, innovative. Carbon fiber, innovative. Using a game controller. Where do I write the check? I write the check. This is crazy. You did $250,000 to pay for a really extravagant burial at sea. This is crazy. You know, pay $250,000. Here's your coffin. You know, people don't want to say, a lot of people don't want to say what they're thinking because they say, yo, you're speaking bad of the dead. But you know, there's something to be learned. We're talking about this. If I had the kind of money, this just shows having a lot of money. Because when you're poor, you're always thinking. All y'all are listening. Some of y'all probably poor on some level or another. I don't know. But you always thinking that money would solve all your stuff. And that you'd be different. But obviously, there's something that literally changes in your brain when you get to a certain amount of wealth. Something in your brain changes. Because rich people always go off and do crazy ass stuff. You're like, why would you do that? Something, you know? You spend all this money and you buy all the stuff. Once you've bought all the stuff you want to buy, then what? You're so focused on that, you don't have the opportunity to imagine that there's other things. See, when you're poor, you ain't got that. So you're forced to focus on other things. Hey, crazy. If you had the kind of money, because if they wouldn't have gotten turned into a sardine can, if that hadn't happened, I think the whole trip was going to last like, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours, something like that. You imagine paying $250,000 for like 4 hours of entertainment. If you got that kind of money, imagine how you could like help people. You know, just random people. People you don't even like know. Because you're not going to miss it. If you can spend $250,000 for an extravagant burial at sea, you know, you could give somebody, because like poor people, you give a poor person $1,000 and be like, oh my God, oh, almost like life changing. You got that kind of money. You just go help random people, like pass some random guy, you know, go out there and, you know, I don't know, the guy that's sweeping the sidewalk, you know, the janitor somewhere, and be like, here you go, and give him like $1,000 and just keep walking. They don't even know who you are. And they'd be like, what's that about? And they look in the envelope and be like, oh my gosh, I can buy clothes for my kids. Woohoo! You do that for, you know, 250 different people. I don't know, man. Instead, you're going to spend it on some crazy frivolousness like that. It's crazy. Changes people's heads, you know? Like, it's like that kind of idea never crosses their mind. It's just, what can I spend? What else can I spend on myself? You know? What else can I spend on myself? What other kind of new thing can I buy for myself? What kind of new experience can I buy for myself? I can buy myself an extravagant burial at sea. That's what I can do. It's just, it does. It comes to a certain amount of madness, you know? Yeah, don't get me wrong. You know, it isn't like I live my life, you know, like being super cautious and I don't do nothing that has risk involved on more levels than one. Like, you've seen those paraplanes, you know, it's basically like a kid's go-kart. and got a parachute on it, got a Rotax engine, a propeller on the back, you know, you're flying around and the parachute goes up and acts like a wing. I would totally fly one of those and take the 1 hour class. And I would totally do that. I would. I would totally fly the paraplane around. So it's not like I wouldn't do something, you know, that it's crazy just for the experience of it. You know, I don't know about that. But you see, to me, it's a mitigating risk. I mean, if the little lawnmower engine, the lawnmower engine on the back quits, what's going to happen? It's a parachute. As long as you ain't over the middle of the city, which would be stupid, all you're going to do is ride the parachute down to the ground and land and then go figure out, you know, drain the water out of the carburetor on your lawnmower engine or whatever the hell, and then fire it back up. But see, that's a certain amount. I'm willing to do that. If you took me up there and said, hey, Dan, I'll give you $1,000 to get in this submarine coffin looking thing. I'm good, bruh. I'll pay you $250,000 to get in this thing. You pay me. Nah, I'm good. I ain't getting in that thing. Somebody thought it was a great idea. And you know, if we're being fair, like I said, obviously, because you see this pattern here, obviously, there is a breaking point where you have a certain amount of money, you get weird. And probably every one of you and me too, if suddenly I had that kind of money, I'd probably get weird and strange too. I don't know. I would hope I wouldn't. I'd hope I have the spiritual maturity where I wouldn't get weird like that. But obviously, most people do. Most of these weird, it doesn't matter. Look at all of them. You know, look at Elon Musk. I mean, you say what you want about the guy, but I mean, you look at the guy. Like, if you didn't know who he was and you just ran into the guy and like he was sitting across from you eating or something, your first impression would be like, this guy kind of weird. You know, this dude's kind of weird. Just looking at him, he just looked kind of weird. Oh, life's just crazy. Everybody's talking about that thing, and I didn't think about it, and I read somebody pointed this out, and what an implosion under that kind of pressure, because they're in that thing, and there's air in there. And see, I'm a decent wrench myself, and I understand. I have a good grasp of how mechanical things work. Like if your car broke down, I could probably fix it. More than likely, I could fix it. Or I could figure out what was wrong with it. I'm just good at that. Not bragging, just saying. But somebody pointed out there's this immense amount of pressure. Basically, the thing turned into like a cylinder, like a cylinder on a diesel engine, because a diesel engine combusts the fuel. There's no spark plug there, and it combusts the fuel by the sheer force of the compression, ignites the air fuel mixture. And so when you say those people, there ain't going to be, you know, the media's so stupid. I can't stand journalists. Y'all know how I feel about journalists. Of course, half the time, journalists just make stuff up. They just make stuff up whole cloth. They don't even try to research things. They don't even try to understand. They just make it up. But other times you see them and they'll do so, and they're just so damn ignorant. Like when they finally came out, and I think they knew this thing was gone. I don't even understand why they is out there talking about there's banging noises under the seat. That's stupid. They're talking about, oh, we're looking for these people. They knew them people was imploded when it happened. But anyway, when they did come out and say, you know, well, it turns out we found them. They're right there. They're basically the pieces are scattered around in the area of the Titanic. And the media is asking them, well, when are you going to recover the bodies? Stupid. And these are college educated people that make way much more money than me, but it don't mean they're smarter, because how damn stupid can you be? Now, if you pointed out to these people that those bodies are gone, literally gone, because they burned up. They burned up to a large extent in the pieces that wasn't burned up. And I'm not trying to be gross here. I'm merely not. And I ain't even trying to be disrespectful to that, but just talking about physics here. And they'd be confused by that. What do you mean? They're under the water. They couldn't burn up under the water. But if you understand how a diesel engine works and the fact this thing had air in it, and then all of a sudden, in a brief instant, it was compressed, an enormous amount of compression. Anything, the heat in there would be so immense that anything that could ignite, including the people, ignited. And in an instant, were extremely burned up before the whole thing collapsed and then spread out into pieces. When are you going to recover the bodies? Oh, yeah. Yeah, we recover the bodies. Like they're down there, whole, just floating around. We're just going to wait for them to wash up on shore. Journalist. I'm going to say there isn't any. But it's just a scummy profession. Didn't used to be that way. I talked about this before. We used to have reporters, and they weren't scummy. But now we have journalists. And they're just some of the biggest scum of the earth. You know, again, I guess not 100%. There's people trying to do some kind of, reporting and stuff like that. But by and large, a vast majority, you see, it'd be tough. If you weren't a scumbag, it would be tough to be a quote-unquote journalist because the entire profession is scummy. The vast majority. And it's like anytime you talk about groups, you're not talking about every single person. No, really, we talk about groups. That's the macro. You're not talking about the micro. There's individual people. Be tough to be a part of that group and be one of the good ones, wouldn't it? You'd be sympathetic towards that. Whatever you're talking about. I'm about groups of people. And you look, and this group of people tends as a group to have this behavior pattern. But if you were one of the good ones in that group, it'd be tough. I couldn't be a quote-unquote journalist and try to be one of the good ones. Because the profession is like the scummiest profession on the face of the earth. I say that, just as a matter of fact. And it's just the truth. It's the scummiest profession on the face of the earth. And these people brag about it, and they think that because, I'm not the only one that thinks that. Every poll they shows that the vast majority of the people hold the media in contempt. Well, guess what, journalists? You are the media. And then they'll brag on it. You see them writing these articles and they'll brag on themselves. I'm a journalist. I'm a journalist. I got my degree in journalism at such and such university. I'm a journalist. And they think that, they're impressing somebody with that. They're so oblivious. They're so oblivious to the fact that, look, the vast majority of the people understand that you're the scum of the earth. It's just like saying, if I'd say, go to this group of people, Dan, and tell them what you do for a living, but just make it up. Just make it up. If I had to go to this group of people and say, I'm a sewer worker, I would say that with more pride than if I went before them and said, I'm a journalist. And I bet the reaction would be, would reflect how most people feel. If you walked up to this random group of people and introduced yourself and said, I'm a sewer worker, I work in the sewer, I clean sewer, I pump out septic tanks for a living. People would be like, oh, wow, that must be kind of tough. I mean, does it stink? I mean, sure, it stinks. How do you deal with that? I'd throw up. I couldn't do that. Yeah, they ain't going to hold you in contempt. Somebody got to do that job. Somebody got to come pump your septic tank out if you got one. Somebody got to go down in the sewer and clean the drain out, whatever. It's a tough job. In fact, if anything, people might give you some begrudging respect. I do. I respect working people. I've been a working person my whole life. And, I do. I respect working people. The idiots don't. Idiots that become things like journalists don't hold me. Yes, you pump out septic tanks, you dee-dee man. Somebody got to do these jobs. You may think you're better than the guy that picks up your trash, but what if he don't pick up your trash? You're going to be living in filth. You have rats and flies and everything else all around your place because ain't nobody picking your trash. You'll be like, how come nobody picking up my trash? Well, because everybody became a journalist. Somebody got to do these jobs. Somebody got to keep the gears running in society. I do. I got nothing but contempt for assholes who look down on people that keep things running. I'm a journalist. I'm much better than the trash truck guy. The trash truck guy contributes a hell of a lot more to the quality of people's daily lives than any scumbag journalist. I'm a journalist. It's fun. I'm a journalist. Like that is something to brag about. They're so oblivious. They don't understand that most people out here view journalists as the absolute scum of the earth. And they are. They make stuff up whole cloth. I don't know how many times I've seen it. You read something, and then if you look into it, you realize that they just made it up. Just made it up whole cloth. You know? If you didn't bother, they just make it up. And if they don't understand it, they make no attempt to at least try to get, like, go ask somebody that does understand it. Oh, these things, I'm talking about things going on in Russia. If these journalists wanted to actually understand what was going on, they'd be calling up Matt Johnson going, hey, explain some of this stuff. What's all this going on? What does it mean? But they don't. They don't even make an attempt to understand it. So they just make something up. They don't care. They're lazy. I'm a journalist. And they're proud of it. They think you're going to be impressed when they lay that on you. What do you do for a living? I'm a journalist. Why are y'all looking at me that way? Got a lot more respect when I'm going down and somebody working on out there sweating, working on the road, patching holes in the road. That guy's making people's lives better. Yeah, he's just doing it for a living. But you know what? His work, the fruit of his labor, is going to make my life better, your life better. When you drive down that stretch of road and you don't blow a tire out hitting this big chuck hole, he's making people's lives better. So I say, working people don't get no credit. The guys out there shoveling that stuff in, you got assholes that are things like a journalist. And they look down on them people. He's out there in the sun. He's not making any real difference. No, he is. The guy shoveling the asphalt into that pothole is making everybody that drives down that road life a little bit better. A whole lot better to some extent. You know, they're doing a whole lot more to a whole lot more people to make their lives better than any journalist. I don't know. I believe that whatever you do, you should try to do the best you can, you know? Otherwise, you're wasting your time, you know? And journalists just don't, they don't even try. They just make stuff up. Does this sound good? Not if it's true. Not how, what can I learn about this? It's one of those things you would have the potential if it was done right, if you weren't a scumbag. You'd have the potential to like learn a little bit about everything because you'd be reporting on different stories that are going on and you would have to learn about those things. And like beforehand, you didn't know anything about that. But since you're going to have to write this story, you're going to go and you're going to read and you're going to go find people that have published books on this. You don't have time to read all the books, but you can go ask that person, hey, at least give me a brief understanding so I don't sound like a moron when I write this story. It would. If it wasn't a scumbag profession, hey Dan, tell us how you really feel about journalists in the media. If it wasn't a scumbag profession, it'd be interesting because, like I say, you would have the opportunity to at least know a little bit about a lot of different things because you'd be exposed to a lot of things. But you see, these people live—they live in their fantasy world, and they just want to write a story. You know, a story. The truth don't factor in. Most media stories are fiction on some level or another. They're just writing a story. They don't want to learn anything. They're going to write a story, and the story is going to conform to their little weird made-up worldview, how they imagine that the world works, which is not remotely correct, connected, to the way the world actually works. They live in this weird fake fantasy world. And so they write these stories not go to find the truth and figure out, because if they did that, this gets to the why they don't do that, maybe. Mostly they don't do that because they're not very smart. They're not very smart. But if they did do that, if they did go and seek out information, they would immediately run into cognitive dissonance because they would run into information that blows up their weird little fantasy world that they live in, this concocted vision of how the world operates would immediately be torpedoed. It would implode like that stupid submarine. So they don't do that. They intentionally, whether they consciously or subconsciously do that, they avoid that because it would torpedo. That's why they never can. That's why you got to have censorship. They never can have people on social media. They can't stand people. They say, these people had to be banned. Because these people be coming in their feed and hitting them with straight facts. And they can't take those facts. It torpedoes their worldview and they can't deal with that. So they live in their little bubble and they're given an assignment. You're going to write this story about this. And they write a story, all right. And it's just a story, as in made up. And you think this don't even make no sense. Well, it doesn't make no sense because I have to write the story in a way to where it protects their weird little made up view of how the world operates, which is not remotely connected to reality. It's not remotely connected to reality. So you get these stories and they just make up parts of it, and other parts of it, they're so obliviously ignorant that they ask questions like, when are you recovering the bodies from 2 miles down in the ocean that were compressed in a basically like in the cylinder of a diesel engine? Yeah, when are you going to recover the bodies? Because they don't want to understand. They're going to go ask somebody. They're going to go ask somebody, say, hey, what happens when you take a capsule full of air and basically fuel? Because at those kind of temperatures, everything is fuel. What happens when you compress those things? They can make one phone call. Do they? No. They don't care. All they care about is reinforcing the weird fantasy world that they live in. Reinforcing this weird, twisted up, unrealistic worldview that they live in. People like that. I was thinking about this the other day because we are, as things spiral out of control, at some point in time, reality is going to smack you in the face. It really is. You know, I mean, those of us that seek the truth, it's a tough road, Hope. It is. It's a tough road to go down. And you may see, because you got all of these people, and most of the time with the power of the state backing them up, who are promoting gibberish, you know, who are promoting a lie and to make your life miserable, you know, with their foolishness. And it's a hard road to go down, but you have to understand that at least when you're based in the truth, when things come apart and we can see things are going downhill to the point, they're going to come apart. They are coming apart. And at some point in time, it's going to be undeniable that they're coming apart. See, once reality, once the truth literally smacks you in the face, then that's going to be a shock. But if you're already seeking out the truth and understand what's going on in the world around you, it's going to be a whole lot less of a shock than these people. I was thinking about what societal collapse, you know, because I don't know what that's going to look like exactly. None of us do. But we do realize that the way things are going is not sustainable, and you're going to have some form of a complete societal collapse in the West, in the U.S. And I often think, you know, what's that look like? I don't know what it looks like. You know, I'll tell you, I don't know. And nobody really knows because nobody can look into the future. But at some point in time, it's going to come around. And I was thinking about how it's going to be rough. It's going to be rough for these people, you know? I mean, again, what does that look like? I don't know. I mean, like me? If it comes down to it, you know, I can work out deals with people. You know, somebody's going to need something fixed, and I can go, like I say, I can go fix it. And in exchange for that, they'll have something that I need, or they can do something for me that I need. We can work something out. What does a journalist in a post-collapse society, what do they got to offer? I'm a journalist. After the society has collapsed, what do you got to offer, honey? I'm a journalist. I have a degree, and ain't nobody going to want to hear nothing like that. It's like, no, I'm asking you, do you know, are you cultivating a garden? Do you know how to grow something to eat? Well, I have a degree, and nobody cares about you, damn. Degree. These people, though, really, when they're weird, because they are so married to this, they're so committed to this weird fake worldview, this fantasy worldview that's not anywhere remotely attached to reality. That when all of that does, you know, and they've protected themselves, they've had people banned, they've had mass censorship to make sure that this little bubble they live in, this fantasy world they've created, isn't threatened, because they don't like that feeling they had. They don't like the feeling they have when it's threatened, when reality is introduced. They don't want to deal with reality. So they have you banned. You're a bad person. You're not allowed to tell me how the world really works. When they live in this bubble, they're not going to be able to do. I mean that. It's not going to be societal, you know, things coming apart. This isn't going to be pleasant for anybody. But those of us who are dealing with reality, those of us that have practical skills, we can do things. We know how things work. We're not journalists. You know, we'll figure out a way, by and large. But when these people who have protected themselves living in a bubble, when all of that implodes, I say this in all seriousness. I suspect a lot of these people will literally kill themselves. I don't think that you see them when how they react when just the tiny pinprick of that bubble happens, when somebody pinpricks it with just a little bit of reality, just a little ding poke, and they like lose their shit. You know, they just come unglued. They just can't handle it over just somebody pointing out some little thing. And what's going to happen when instead of a pinprick, the thing is like that submarine, you just poof, crashes in on them. I mean that. I do not think those people will be mentally capable of handling that. I don't. I don't think they'll be mentally capable of handling it. I think they're going to come completely apart. I think they will come completely apart. And I think a lot of them would just kill themselves. They just won't be able to deal with that large of a shock. I mean, the changes, we get frustrated. I know y'all get frustrated. We see clown war going on and we're like, this is crazy, all this stuff. But see, we are dealing with it. It's aggravating and it's frustrating sometimes because we're trying to process this. But what you have to understand is at least you're trying to process the world around you. You're trying to understand what's going on and why it's going on and how things work. And you're processing. You understand these people that live in these bubbles, they're not processing anything. They're living in this little sterile environment. They're living in this little bubble and they're not processing any information. At some point in time, it's all going to come crashing down and it can't be sustained anymore. They can't have the power. They won't have the power of the state to run around and ban everybody and tell everybody to shut up and not tell them about the truth. The truth's going to slap them in the face and they're not going to be able to deal with it. I mean, just imagine yourself. If suddenly tomorrow your entire worldview was turned upside down and everything you believed in, I mean, it's an abstraction because if you believe in the truth and you listen to the show, you probably by and large believe in the truth. You believe in the truth, so that's not going to happen. But just, as an abstract way to look at things, if your entire worldview for whatever reason somehow was turned topsy-turvy upside down and everything you thought was true turns out it wasn't true and everything is flipped over and now, something else is real, that would be hard to process. That would be hard to, that'd be hard to understand. It'd be hard to put together and hard to accept. Anybody, but these people intentionally live in a fantasy world. They lose their minds when somebody points out the truth. When somebody says something that they don't think you should be allowed to say because they've decided that's a no-no word. They want to live in a nanny state. They want to be babysat. They want somebody to sit around and hold their hand. And they want their lives micromanaged by the government because that's their god. God, the government should micromanage, and I don't like those bad people. And I'll be able to deal with it. I'm telling you, these people, you're going to see mass suicides, because they're just not going to be able to process it. And those that don't kill themselves, that's some cop. Those that don't kill themselves are going to have a really tough go of it because they don't have nothing to offer. They don't have any real skills. They feeling real good. They looking down on the trash truck man today. They looking down on the sewer guy today because I don't have to get dirty. I'm a journalist. I work in a cubicle. I make up stories. When the world turns into what can you do? I'm not asking what you did before. I'm asking what can you do now? That's what's going to have value when times get really tough. Well, what can you do now? These people don't have any real world skill sets. These are the type of people like, I don't know, if their shower head is no good, they can't figure out how to unscrew the shower head and screw the new one on. Much less, before you screw the new one on, reach in there and put that damn water restrictor out of there so the thing actually works with the damn. They don't even know how to do that. They can do that. Ain't bringing a lot to the table of survival. Anyway. Hey, look at the time. It is roughly midpoint of the show, and you know what that did. You know what that means? It's that time. That's right. Get in there. Let's fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. Now, as we get into this week's Christian-specific segment, I want to get back into the listener-supporter mailbag. This is from Mr. T. GPD, just a thought. I love the rain while enjoying a recent downpour. It occurred to me that rain is a symbol of God's love for us. Granted, I think he's pretty pissed off at us, but still loves both the, or I'm sorry, gives both the wicked and the just rain. And again, that's from Mr. T. Thank you very much. And I stuck this on the end, into the Christian specific segment because it gave me motivation to, kind of touch on this subject this week. We may get into some other stuff. I had something else jotted down here. I don't know if we will, and I would just, we'll just see how that goes. Now, of course, you could reference this in Matthew chapter 5. It says in verse 45, Jesus says, "For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and the unjust." Now, I purposely isolated the quote and said, you know, usually I like to read like before and after, so we kind of have a little more context. That gets into the whole, you know, what it means to love your enemies and whatnot. And I've kind of done that to death, and I don't want to get sidetracked into that because that's not really where I wanted to go with it this week. But the idea of, you know, he sends his rain, causes it to rain on both the just and the unjust, the sun to rise on the wicked and on the righteous. And I thought it might be good to kind of think about, you know, what that means. And I think a good way to kind of put that in context is let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 9. As many of you know, Ecclesiastes is one of my favorite books. "For all this I considered in my heart, even to declare all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. No man knoweth either love or hatred by all that is before him. All things come alike to all. There is one event to the righteous and to the wicked, to the good and to the clean and to the unclean, to him that sacrificeth and to him that sacrificeth not. As is the good, so is the sinner, and he that sweareth and he that feareth an oath. This is an evil among all things that are done under the sun, that there is one event unto all. Yea, also the heart of the sons of men is full of evil. Madness is in their heart while they live, and after that they go to the dead. For to him that is joined to all the living, there is hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything. Neither have they any more a reward, for the memory of them is forgotten." Now, the reason I wanted to put these two verses, you know, these two different passages in the Bible together is because when you read Jesus talking about God, you know, causes a rain on the just and the unjust or whatnot, it almost sounds like it's easy to misunderstand that is God blesses the wicked and the just, which that just doesn't seem right. The idea that God is blessing, you know, wicked, evil people, and, you know, like on the same level as his own people. But I don't believe that's what's conveying, and that's why I went to Ecclesiastes, because I think it gives us a better understanding that while we're alive, you know, we're just here on the earth, and things come to people. It says elsewhere, and I don't want to get into a whole bunch of Bible reading because that gets tedious, but it says elsewhere in Ecclesiastes, it points out that sometimes you look around and you see the righteous getting the reward that the wicked deserve. You know, bad things are happening to them. And likewise, there's times you look around and it's like the wicked are prospering. We see that a lot. And it's like the wicked are prospering and the wicked are receiving the reward that ought to be due to the righteous. And why is this? As we are alive here on the earth, this short time that we have, as he says in Ecclesiastes, and then we go to the grave. We all meet the same fate. The person who worships God and tries to live a righteous and upright life, and the wicked and the evil and the unjust. We all are facing the same end. During this short, brief time that we have on this world, we leave this world and we go to the dead. And we'll have no more partaking in the things of this world. We won't have any more opportunities. Even our name is forgotten eventually. I always find it interesting when I'm in a strange place. When you, if you ever get the chance and you got some time on your hand and you're somewhere maybe unfamiliar and you find one of those really old graveyards and you walk through and look at the really old, old gravestones from, you know, 100 years ago, over 100 years ago. And, you know, you remember that those people, they lived at one time. You know, and they had hopes and dreams and had people they loved and care about, or they had things that they were angry about or things they thought were really big deal. And now nobody knows who they even are. Oftentimes on those old gravestones, the writing on the stone is weathered away and you can't even make out their name. It's like they never existed. While we're here on this earth, we're exercising our free will. We can exercise our free will to do good, to do righteous, or to be righteous, or we can exercise our free will to do wickedness and to do evil and to bring harm to others. This is our choice. I often point out when people, non-believers, talk about, you know, why does God allow this to happen? Well, because the opposite of that, in other words, if he were to, quote unquote, not allow that to happen, it would mean removing our free will. And you say, well, God shouldn't let all these bad things go on in the world. Then that means you'd have to take away the people that cause these things to happen. You'd have to take away their free will to prevent them from doing that. But that means you have to lose your free will as well. If God takes away the free will of the wicked so that they cannot commit wickedness, if he takes away the free will of the unjust so as to prevent their injustice, then by extension, that means you also have to lose your free will. These things come about because of the decisions of men during the short period of time we have on this earth, in this life. We have to become NPCs. That's the answer if you don't want those things to happen. You can't say, well, everybody else shouldn't have their free will, but I want mine. Who among any of us wants to be a mindless NPC just going through motions, being manipulated and moved around by God with no free will of our own? Nobody wants that. That's not appealing to anybody because it makes this entire life pointless. But if the righteous and the upright and those who seek God have free will and are justified and glorified by God because they exercise their free will and faith to seek him out when they could choose wickedness and evil. You wouldn't get credit for what you're doing, for your righteousness and your uprightness and the things you get right. You wouldn't get credit for that if God was just doing it for you. He was just moving you around because you didn't have any free will. How much greater is the glory of a righteous man who uses his free will to seek God when he has the equal opportunity to choose wickedness, debauchery, and sin as the wicked man who does choose those things? We all have our free will. And when you exercise that free will to seek God, it is to your greater glory because that means you yourself made that choice. There is a tendency, and there has always been a tendency, for men to think that when something bad happens to them, they're looking for a reason that God must be punishing them. This has happened to me, and it's because I did this or I didn't do that, and God is reaching. And we're told again, time and time again, it's illustrated in the Bible. If God causes the rain to fall on everybody, it just means that you're just here. I mean, if something bad happens, it doesn't mean God is sitting down there now poking you with a stick and whacking you as punishment for what you're doing, you know, for what you did. Sometimes things just happen. You know, things happen to you because other people have free will. And because they're exercising their free will, it can have a negative impact on you. And that is just life. But again, the only solution to that is that everybody loses their free will. And then that eliminates the entire point of why we're here. We can set our hearts upon the Lord. We can seek him out and try to understand him and try to move on from this limited worldly thinking as best we can. Or we can choose the path of the wicked, which is the easy path. We can just go along with the world, just chase after the things of the world. But ultimately, the choice is ours. It says in Ecclesiastes, during this short time on this world, you've got the choice. Your decisions, this is your time to shine. This is your time to make decisions to either enjoy this life, be miserable in this life, whatever you do. But it will be gone. It says in Ecclesiastes, and again, as a lot of you know, long-time listeners know, Ecclesiastes is like probably one of the definitely in my top three favorite books of the Bible, because it talks about, you know, enjoy your life. You know, he says, eat, drink, and be merry. He's not talking about go off into like sin, drunkenness, and debauchery, but he just says, enjoy your life because you're only here for a little while. I hate the fact that so often believers, Christian believers, think that somehow being miserable is somehow pious. That somehow equals righteousness. I'm this down. I just got my head down, and I'm just a miserable person in this life. And that somehow equates to righteousness. You know, find something to be cheerful about. You're only here for a little while. Whether you're going through something good, whether things are good right now, you're prospering, you're blessed, and you just feel close to God and everything's great, or whether things are really bad right now, you're going through a really rough patch and you can't see a way out of it, and it seems like the entire world has turned their backs on you, and you just, it seems like there's no hope. Understand that in both situations, it's temporary. The good times are not going to last forever, nor the bad. We're given this short period of time on earth, and it's just because this is it. We are put in here. God is not micromanaging our life. It rains on the just and the unjust. The sun rises on the wicked, and the sun rises on the righteous. We're given this little time on earth to exercise our free will and make our choices. Who are we going to side with? Who are we going to seek out? How are we going to spend this life? We talked recently, I think last week, we were talking about how, you know, people chasing after money, you know, they spend this life building up wealth. You know, a wealthy man spends his life building up all of this wealth. And to what end? And we just had this story in this past week of the submarine people. And, you know, it could cost you $250,000 to go ride this submarine. Well, obviously, they were very well off. But at the end of the day, when that thing imploded, they left this world with no money. That money doesn't buy you anything. It's a chasing after futility. It is why in the Bible it tells us over and over again about the folly of being wealthy, of chasing after money, how this is just a fool's errand. Because when you leave, it's all gone. It's all taken from you. But again, we're given this time on earth. God, essentially, we all are given this allotment of time, however long that is, on this earth to exercise our free will. Now, what are we going to do with it? There you are. You're put out here. Now, let's see what you do with it. It's your choice. He's not going to stop you. It's your choice. Now, what are you going to do? I think one of the more difficult balances as believers we strike is to, on the one hand, break out of the mindset that God is somehow micromanaging our lives. You know, that every little thing in our life has something to do with Jesus, because it don't. It's just life. You're just going through this life. You're making your decisions as best you can. Other people are making their decisions. Sometimes those decisions affect you and will cause you to have to make other decisions to adjust to that. Sometimes the decisions have no right answer. But God is not micromanaging our life. You know, every little thing, you get home in time to watch, I don't know, your favorite TV show. I'm just grabbing something out of the top of my head. You're rushing home. You hope you get home in time to see your favorite TV show. And you make it in time. And it's like, I made it 1 minute left. I didn't think I was going to make it. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord, for getting me home in time to watch it. Jesus didn't have nothing to do with that. Just life. I hear people, you know, and they do, you hear these stories, you read these stories of people that do something really foolish, you know, they do something really foolish and they put their children in danger. And then as a result, something bad happens, their children get killed and they're on TV or they're being interviewed and they say, Jesus took him. Jesus took my baby. No, Jesus didn't have anything to do with it. You were being a dumbass and put your kid in a bad situation. And as a result of your choices, they got killed. Don't be putting it off on Jesus. That was you. We're all exercising our free will on this earth. Again, the opposite of that is if God just made us NPCs, which makes the whole thing pointless. We wouldn't need to be here at all. God is not micromanaging your life. every good thing that happens to you isn't necessarily because Jesus was like, I'm going to give him a little something extra today. Likewise, on the flip side of that, everything that bad is happening, don't be running around looking for what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong, Lord? Why are you punishing me? I didn't have nothing to do with that. It's just life. And we've got, I think it's one of the more difficult things for believers. And if you look through the Bible, it's illustrated, particularly in the book of Job. The book of Job is an illustration, is you know, basically laying out and understanding that, you know, not everything is God is punishing us. All through the book of Job, everybody's trying to convince Job, what did you do? You know, you've had all this ridiculously bad things happen to you. So God is punishing you for something. He's like, no, I didn't. I don't know. This life, we can't have this idea that every bad thing is because, well, God is punishing. I screwed something up somewhere. I got to figure out what I did wrong. God is punishing me. Now, some people will take this to the extreme, and I particularly don't. But again, I think it's difficult because I think we have to strike a balance as believers. And this is me personally. How I come at it, your view may be different. Because some people take this to the extreme that God is 100% totally indifferent to us. Like, yeah, he's paying zero attention to what happens to us. Now, I don't necessarily believe that either. I believe the more we are working to understand him and the closer we get to him and the more we fall in and begin doing his work here, of course, he is going to be aware of us, and not to be aware of us, but to acknowledge us and perhaps help us along. You know, I don't go to the extreme that basically God kicks us out here and he'll check us out when we leave. You know, you just in here and he doesn't look at all at what you do or pay absolutely no mind to man, because the Bible also tells us that that is not the case, is there are instances. But again, a lot of the times, we're just going through life. You say, you look in the Bible, and whether you look at the New Testament and the Old Testament, where there's times where God is like directly intervening with man. And he, you know, he comes to the prophet and says, go tell the king this. Or he go and announce this to the people. Or in the New Testament, where he tells the apostles, go out and do this. Or the apostles are going out and they're healing the sick or whatnot. But think about, that's because they're the main characters in that particular story. If you look at, stop for a minute and step back and think, okay, but what about all of those other people that were watching this that we don't hear about? They're just like, it's like they're just background characters. But those were all also living people, just the same as those other men. We don't hear about them, details about them, because they were living what would be considered mundane lives. But they were participating in lives. In the instance of the prophet or the apostles, God is actually directly intervening and directly communicating in a way with them and directly using them. So they're having that experience. But all of the other people are going through life as well. But you see, God is not necessarily doing any of that with them. So if you want to experience more of, you know, a feeling of a more direct interaction with God. And it's not like you're going to be the next Elijah, but you got to find, you know, if you can find a way to draw, you know, we seek to draw closer to him. I'll spit this out in a minute. We seek and struggle to be closer to him. And in so doing, we're going to see ways that we contribute to what he's doing in whatever way we can. And as we grow closer to him, you're going to have a closer experience. And, you know, you're going to draw closer. You're going to see things that he does. Maybe not even for you, but you'll look around and see things he's doing. And you recognize that, you know, God is making an adjustment there. Something happened. Something came about. I've seen things to where when I look back on them at the time, maybe even it didn't even dawn on me. But when I look back, I'm like, the idea that this many random factors all happened at the same time for this one thing to come about at just that moment when it needed to come about, the mathematical possibilities of that are ridiculous. God was tinkering. He made that happen so that this piece could fall into the puzzle of his will. So he does get involved to an extent, but for the most part, what you see in life is just people going about their lives, and most of the stuff you're going to deal with in your life, and the absolute vast majority of the things you're going to deal with in your life are just life. That's not God doing it to you. That's not God necessarily doing it for you. It's just life. We live in these extremely wicked times. When we hear about the unjust, there's a lot of unjust. The justice system is so perverted now. It's like instead of the justice system, instead of things, you know, the wicked being punished, it seems like they're intentionally by this system rewarded. It can be very frustrating. It can be very frustrating. You know, it's like we want to see God come down and put a whooping on these people, because it just seems like there's just sometimes it seems like there's no end to it. But there is an end to it. These things continue. There were wicked kings. There were corrupt judges. There were corrupt systems all throughout history. And where are they now? See, at some point in time, they all came to an end. We look around. You see these corrupt, wealthy men who seem hell-bent on destroying society for whatever reason. But are they the first corrupt and wicked, wealthy old men that ever existed? No. These men have come and they have gone, and they all leave with the same thing, nothing. They have nothing to show for it. You have to understand, when we're all given the same basic opportunities, and I don't mean like, yes, some people are born into poverty, some people are born into wealth. I don't mean that kind of opportunity. I'm talking about the opportunity of life. We are all given the same opportunity, as in we are all born into this world and we are all given free will. That is the opportunity that we have. Some people are born into extremely unfortunate circumstances, but you're still given life and you're still able to make your choices. That's why you can't go around. You see adult people that are making really bad choices and doing really self-destructive things in their lives. And if you ask them about it, they want to ramble on about their poor upbringing and how bad their parents were and their poor childhood. And they're just renouncing their own free will. They're saying their childhood rules over. I'm not saying those things don't influence. Of course they do. But I'm saying when you're an adult, you're making those decisions. Yes, you may be making those decisions because you got a warped view on life because of your shitty childhood, but it's still you making those decisions. You can't just give yourself an excuse off, well, it's not my fault because I had a crappy upbringing. You are making those decisions. And things is hard. You struggle with sin. And you struggle with sin. You say, oh, I'm struggling with this. I've had people write to me and say, I've struggled with this one sin. You know, I do pretty good everywhere else. Well, you know what? That's everybody. And for everybody, it's something different. I struggle with this one thing, and I just, you know. Well, let me tell you something. It's a struggle because it becomes less of a struggle. I'll spit this out again. I'll spit this out in a minute. It will become less of a struggle for you when you realize that it's not this big, powerful thing that keeps dragging you back to doing it. It's just simply you deciding to do it. When you're struggling with sin, you're sitting around going, man, I don't know why. Why I keep doing that? Well, because you're choosing to do it. Because you're getting something out of it. You're simply choosing to do it. We shy away from this because that means it's on us. But you need to do that. You need to accept that it is on you. Because all the justifications you're making up, whether you say it's because of your childhood, or your mom and daddy were shitty to you as a kid, or whatever, those are just justifications. And when you leave this world and you stand before God, all that's going to be gone. And you're going to have to look at yourself as you are, with no lying to yourself or justifications or reason for what just as it is. The sooner you come to the realization that the sin you're struggling with is just... It's just because you're choosing to do it. The sooner that you're struggling with is going to lose its power over you. Now I kind of wandered off topic with that, but the point is that we are given this time. We have an equal opportunity in the sense that we're given life. If you're alive, if you're listening to this, you are alive. Whether you got 50 years of living ahead of you, or wherever you got 5 days left, you are still alive. You're alive here on the earth. You have opportunities. You are here. You can make your choices. And that, I think, gets to the heart of the matter. God causes it to rain on the just and the unjust. We're all here on this world. We all have free will. We're all making our choices. We all have the same opportunity, not the same circumstances, but we do have the same opportunity because we're alive and we have free will. We make the same choice and we're going to get the same outcomes. You know, some folks start off in life so far behind the eight ball, they never get very far. But you do have the same opportunity because you are given life. And it says in Ecclesiastes, once you go to the grave, you're done. You know, a live dog is better than a dead lion. Because once you're dead, you're dead. The lion is this big, fearsome beast. But once it's dead, it's just a corpse. It's just a lump of flesh that's going to rot back into the ground. And it doesn't have any, it doesn't hold any sway over anybody. Anyway, just understand that when you look around, that it's when you read something like that, that, you know, God causes it to rain on the just, the unjust, and whatnot, doesn't mean God is blessing them. When you look at these really wicked, evil people, it doesn't mean that God is blessing them. You know, it's just we all are given a choice on this earth, you know, and it really is kind of almost an unfortunate circumstance for the wealthy and for the privileged, because they're going to have less opportunity just by that circumstance, by its very nature, that they're going to wind up focused on those things. They're going to have less opportunity to mature spiritually and make the choices necessary and to spend their time, you know, gaining spiritual maturity so they're ready for being birthed into the real life to come. Anyway, we're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you got something out of it. Thank you, Mr. T. You gave me I'm looking for Rick, because I do, especially the Christian specific segment. First part of the show, I usually find something to ramble on about. There's always some kind of craziness going on in the world, but a lot of times for the Christian specific segments, I struggle. I do. I sit here and it's because, as I've said before, I don't find these things. I really don't think the things in the Bible, and so I don't think these things are really complicated. Sometimes it's kind of hard to wrap our minds around them and understand them. But I mean, I think God intentionally, you know, he didn't make this, you know, to be out of our grasp. You know, the concepts and the ideas here, you know, we can get hung up on details, but the general idea and what God lays out for, these are very, it's a very simple thing, honestly. He doesn't make this overly complicated so that we can't figure it out. And so as a result of that, a lot of times I kind of struggle, you know, well, what to talk about? And I think, well, I talk about this. And it's like, well, everybody gets that. Or I think we can talk about this week. And I'm thinking, how many times have I basically said the same thing? You know, and I don't want to be like a broken record. I want y'all to tune into this and be like, well, let's see what you got to say this week. And you're like, this shit. Pretty sure he said that a couple weeks ago, because that's what I feel like sometimes. I do this and I'm like, I finish and I'm like, hey, this is basically the same thing I've been saying. People are going to get tired of hearing it. So yeah, no, do appreciate it. We're going to go ahead and wrap up on that note. Thank you for joining me this week. I hope you all will check out all our great content. We're getting up Monday through Fridays here on Radio Albion. I say great content more humbly than I meant for that to sound. You know, Dr. Johnson's stuff is always is really, really great. And I'm doing the best I can. Doing the best I can. But I do. I think we're at least keeping the ship afloat Monday through Fridays. I hope y'all check out all of that and give it a chance. And as always, I hope you'll join us here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.